You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
With Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is casual Friday, May 13th. 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District. Very casual today, folks. Evan is sick. Norsey, New Dorsey, Matt is riding the board. No, the plug right next to it. There you go. Doing fine. We will make it. We will make it. Don't worry about talking today, Matt.
I couldn't hear the show.
Well, there you go. All right, it is. We got a great program for you today, assuming we actually are able to technically deliver it to you. On the program today, Morgan Spurlock from Supersize Me, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden? His latest Palm Wonderful Presents, the greatest movie ever sold. And then, of course, Chris Rosen from MovieLine.com. We'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Tons of stories today. Let me go through some briefs. We'll do this very quickly as we are jam-packed today. Harry Reid vowing a vote on the DREAM Act the other day. You remember the DREAM Act is nearly identical last year's House proposal. Offers a pathway to citizenship for between 1 and 2 million illegal immigrants who came to the U.S. before the age of 16. They came as young children. Their parents obviously brought them. They have lived in the country for at least 5 years. They have a high school diploma or the equivalent and enter college or join the military. Then they can become citizens. And, of course, this bill failed in the Senate last year because the Republicans who supported it before backed out because they decided it was more advantageous for them to hate on immigrants. Meanwhile, Navy researchers have found toxins in war zone dust are linked to ailments. U.S. troops in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait have inhaled microscopic dust particles laden with toxic metals, bacteria, and fungi, a toxic stew that may explain everything from the undiagnosed Gulf War syndrome symptoms lingering from the 91 war against Iraq to high rates of respiratory, neurological, and heart ailments encountered in the current wars. This is from Navy researchers. Senate Democrats the other day unveiled a plan to save $21 billion over the next decade by limiting tax breaks for big oil companies. We have some decent sound. If we can play that later in the program, we'll see. No, you don't have it. I have it. But it's got Republicans running for the hills. They're terrified of it. When I was on Kudlow the other day, he's like, well, it's $21 billion. This is a drop in the bucket. Meanwhile, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals appears to be leaning towards rejecting challenges to the individual insurance mandate of the federal health care law. A computer picks the judges that sit on this panel, three of them, I believe, appointed by Obama, one by Clinton. The panel appeared very sympathetic to the government's argument that it's using a mandate to address massive social problems. Let me play a trailer from the greatest movie ever sold, and then we will talk to Morgan Spurlock. Here it is.
So what I want to do is make a film all about product placement, marketing, and advertising, where the entire film is funded by product placement, marketing, and advertising. The goal of this whole film is transparency. You're going to see the whole thing take place from beginning to end.
Morgan is an idiot. He thinks all of Americans are idiots, and all the people who sponsored this film are idiots.
So ultimately, what we want to try and do is create what is the Iron Man of documentaries. Everything from top to bottom is branded from beginning to end. First time ever, documentary with collector cups.
We're going to be on that like a wet t-shirt. Is there a plot?
Liz, this is the movie right now.
I think the thing to do is go get a client.
Can we please get Mane and Tail to be the sponsor? What are the words that you would use to describe Ban? Ban is blank.
That's a great question.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Morgan Spurlock, the filmmaker. His latest film, Palm Wonderful, presents the greatest movie ever sold. We'll be back in a minute. Folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Pleasure to welcome to the program the director of Super Size Me, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden, various other television programs, and, of course, his latest Palm Wonderful presents the greatest movie ever sold. Thanks for joining us, Morgan.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Let's talk about the genesis of the film. I saw it a couple of weeks ago, and it's a great, window into some of the most horrid aspects of filmmaking in some respects.
Yeah, I think that what the film does a great job of doing is kind of pulling the curtain back, showing you kind of what goes on in this business, you know, showing you the influence and manipulation that companies actually start to have over film and television, and really gives you insight into a world that I don't think anybody's ever gotten to see.
Now, what inspired you to do this? I mean, you mentioned in the film that you saw a lot of your friends in the business with these huge, I guess, multi-platform blockbusters.
Yeah.
How much of it was really actually your personal and sort of your emotional desire to have a blockbuster like that?
Well, I mean, Well, I thought it was, you know, we thought it was a good idea, and to make a film that kind of explores the world of, you know, advertising, marketing, and product placement, and get the whole film paid for by those companies, I was like, there's a good idea there, you know, it's a good idea to dive in. And for me, it was really, it also stemmed from just kind of the pervasiveness of how much, like, marketing and advertising is in our daily lives. Like, you can't leave the house today without feeling like there's somebody trying to sell you something. You know, from when I get on a bus, or I get on the subway, or I get on in a cab, even when I go to the bathroom. I used to have a little me time when I went to the bathroom.
I understand.
You know, yeah, it used to be a little quiet time, and now it's not.
And so, well, I mean, so as you went through this process, and, you know, it's obvious, it's, I mean, it's apparent from the clip we just played before you came on that the film is actually about you making the film, or really, I guess, more accurately, financing the film.
Yeah.
And it looked for a while like you weren't going to get anybody to bite. But the fascinating thing is, if there's a buck to be made, it really doesn't, you can find a brand that will find a hook.
You'll find someone, and I think that's what the film, you know, one of the heart ideas of the film, one of the core values of the film is that everything is for sale. That literally anything, you could buy almost anything these days. Just a couple weeks ago, you know, right before the film opened, or, you know, it was kind of making its way out across the country now, I flew to Altoona, Pennsylvania, you know, went there, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I gave the mayor a big giant check for $25,000, and for the next 60 days, the town of Altoona has officially changed its name to Palm Wonderful Presents the greatest movie ever sold, Pennsylvania. And so, I think it's sad, but it continues this question of, well, where do we stop? Where does it end? You know, we have stadiums, we have buildings, you know, now advertising is making its way into schools, and, you know, they're starting to sell off the naming rights to gymnasiums and classrooms and things inside school districts. Where does it end?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I mean, today there was a story about how Scholastic's in-school marketing division is now presenting the United States of Energy, which is sponsored by the coal industry, the American Coal Foundation.
Amazing.
And they're teaching this to kids. I mean, so the great thing about your movie is that it's an insight into movie making. I mean, product placement's been there for a long time. But it provides a great insight into the minds of people who are willing to sponsor to just basically get their name out there. I mean,
yeah, and one of the things that I love about the film is it also shows the influence that, you know, once you start getting in bed with a brand or with a corporation, it's not a, you know, 30% chance or a 50% chance. It's a 100% chance they will influence the content in some way.
Right.
And I think that you see that play out in real time in this movie, and it's incredible to see.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, product placement obviously has been around for a long time, but what I think we have moved into a different realm with the cross promotion, where mm-hmm. our entire culture seems to be inundated by this stuff. I mean, you were selling Palm. I guess I got to say this: Palm Wonderful Presents the greatest movie ever sold. Cuts. Right?
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? it just rolls right off. It's so easy.
Well, I mean, at one point, did I mean, you know, in these conversations that you had, for instance, like with Palm. Did they ever say, like, man, this could be a really, awkward,
a bad idea,
shitty movie? Like, you know, you're just going to say Palm Wonderful Presents. Is that going to did they have any sort of sensitivity to the actual product other than its potential reach?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had sensitivity, you know, with regards to how they were going to be portrayed. And, I mean, everybody pushed back on the film. When we first started getting contracts, every contract basically said from the brand, we want 100% control of the movie. Absolutely not. Well, we want final approval of the film. Absolutely not. We want final approval of how our product's going to be seen in every frame that we're in. You know, absolutely not. And we continued to push back. But, you know, the brands wanted to have a tremendous amount of control. And that's why so many companies said no, is, you know, at the end of the day, we weren't going to let them have that control.
Right. But I guess what I'm asking is less about their wanting control relative to how their brand is presented. And if anybody ever raised the question of, like, hey, are people going to want, I mean, did people ask you, like, what's the arc What's the emotional journey that you're taking people on?
And people would say there was a great interview which you see in the trailer. If people go to thegreatestmovieeversold.com, they can see the trailer for the film where one of the sponsors that we go to, one of the brands that actually came on, said, "Is there a plot?" He's like, "What's the movie about?" And I'm like, "Well, this is the movie right now. This is it. Me pitching you the film and all this whole process is part of the movie." And, you know, and I think that's what one of the things I love about the film and what makes the film work is that it literally is a film within a film, a story within a story. As you start to see this whole thing kind of come to fruition, you know, the things that we critique in the beginning of the movie in the worlds of advertising and marketing are the exact same things that we implement at the end of the film to advertise and market our movie. And you see that all start to come to fruition. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And so what was the reaction of these folks? What are their reactions now? I mean, you know, Palm Wonderful didn't they have some sort of like financial benchmarks, what their money was contingent upon?
Yeah, well, they there was money that was still owed to us. Like they still owe us $400,000. They gave
$400,000.
Yeah, they owe us $400,000. They gave us $600,000. And so to get the extra $400,000, we have to achieve a certain amount of media impressions, 600 million media impressions. We have to show on over 250 screens worldwide. We have to have 500,000 downloads and DVDs. And it has to generate $10 million worldwide at the box office.
So this is the time where you're really, I guess, I mean, have you reached that?
Well, we've reached the number of media impressions, you know, at this point, just to give you an idea of how much, like, I thought we would be impossible to hit 600 million media impressions. I thought it would be so hard. And just out of the Sundance Film Festival in January, when we got our first report from Burrells, which is a company that measures media, you know, kind of media mentions and media placement, February 1st, we got the report out of Sundance. We'd already had 900 million media impressions.
Wow.
And that was like that was before the film was even released. So the thing that we didn't do, as you look back, you know, hindsight being 2020, and if anybody ever, as they ask me for advice as they're getting in bed with brands, like, what do I do? And I tell them all, I say negotiate for success, which we didn't do. Like, we didn't negotiate a bonus structure. We didn't negotiate, well, if we hit these benchmarks or go beyond certain benchmarks, we are guaranteed this much more money of X, which was a mistake.
So and are you now? I mean, I imagine now is, I mean, to get that extra, to get that $400,000, that I imagine
a lot of work.
Yeah, now is sort of like this is almost more even. You're still got to go out and pimp yourself in a really aggressive way.
That's right. You know, I'm still out. You know, I'm still out banging the P.T. Barnum drum.
Right. I mean, so much so you will actually come on the Majority Report. As a in some way to get another media.
Well, that's because it is listened to by the majority. I'm not going on the Minority Report.
No, well, I mean, but that may be next up. I mean, at this point. Well, so, hey, let me ask you this. I mean, because your work is really interesting to me in the sense that it is not overtly, or I should say, partisan political. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I mean, I think you clearly have an ideology. How would you? What would you express? What that ideology would be that seems to sort of permeate your films?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing for me is, you know, the way that I try to make movies is, you know, I'm somebody who doesn't like to be told what to do. You know, I don't like to be told what to think. And I try not to let my movies have that same effect. You know, I want people to formulate your own opinion over the course of watching the film or the TV show. So that when you leave, you can say, here's what I think, here's what Morgan thinks, and, you know, I'm going to do what he says. I want you to walk away and kind of make up your own mind. And I think that's, for me, that's a really important thing to have in a film, because I think it'll generate much more conversation. It'll generate much more dialogue. It'll generate a lot more interest, and I think it'll turn that interest into action in some level.
Are there times where you do look at people you know in the industry and sort of say, like, man, if I was just willing to do one of those, like, I don't know, a remake of a cartoon, or you know,
right.
Or you know, I could do one, you know, if I did the Squeakquel part 3.
Yeah.
I could get
Well, I remember right after Supersize Me, I got sent tons of scripts, you know, to do
right.
like a narrative movie. And I've always wanted to do a narrative film, and at some point I will, but you know, one of the scripts that I was, like, I was sent a remake to Revenge of the Nerds. I was sent, like, the new Deuce Bigelow script. And uh-huh. I was like, I really can't do this. You know, this is not what I want to be spending my time doing. Life is too short.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, do you at ever any point, I guess, perceive that that can be a an engine to free you up to do other projects? Or, I mean, are you just feeling that as long as it you can get away with doing sort of these things on your terms, why not?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm in a unique place where I am getting away with doing them on my terms. And so long as I can keep doing that, you know, I'd rather not have to feel like I'm, you know, selling my soul. You know, that's what made this film work on so many levels. I think that we were able to get these companies to come in, give up control, take their money, and make the film that ultimately I still wanted to make. You know, that was a real coup, you know, when it came to, you know, producing the greatest movie ever sold. So, you know, for me, it's like I would really like to make sure I can still kind of stay the path and you know, be true to the things that I want to make before I kind of, you know, start giving up.
When you go to your representatives, and I should say, because it is Name Drop Friday on this program, that I know your attorney somewhat, I mean, just slightly. But when you go to your representatives and you say, like, I want to do this movie, I mean, I guess to a certain extent we saw it in the movie, but, I mean, was there moments where they were off camera going, like, dude, seriously, don't do this?
I mean, every time I talk to them, anytime I call any of my attorneys, like, whether I call, you know, Lincoln Banlow in L.A. or I call Paul Brennan here in New York, who you see in the film, I say, here's what I want to do, and I explain what it is. There's usually a moment of silence followed by a big sigh. Followed by them saying, now, do you want me? Where do you want me to start in telling you why you shouldn't do this? You know, and at which point we start talking about it. And then I'm saying, well, what can I do to make it possible for me to do this? And then we start breaking it down from there. But, no, I have many, many confused and distraught conversations with my attorneys.
And, you know, to get more specifically about that other question about the way, did people in the end, I mean, some of these companies – or, you know, particularly companies, some of the branding companies that you went to visit, you know, as you were getting advice, do you have any sense as to how some of those people perceive themselves? I mean, it just always fascinates me if some of these people in the branding world, I find I would be embarrassed if I was them. Now, obviously, they're not embarrassed by what they do or ashamed, but I wonder if there's ever moments where they look at themselves on film as you know, from like a third party perspective, looking at themselves as a subject, if they ever have those moments of like, ey.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of brands that when they saw this film were like, I wish I hadn't have said that, wish we wouldn't have done that. But, you know, ultimately the whole goal of this movie is transparency and, you know, showing a very honest and open picture of how this business works and what goes on behind closed doors. And the fact that they were open enough to be there and to relinquish that control, I mean, I think that honesty, as much as it may make them uncomfortable, is what makes the movie work.
Right. And they just got to deal with it, I guess.
And it makes them, and I think it ultimately makes them come off a lot smarter. It makes them look a lot better because there were so many people that said no and pushed back on this film that the few that said yes and said yes and came on board for what you know, at the end of the day is a very small amount of money. And when it comes to like what are the money some of these corporations generate, it makes them look really smart. It makes them look really savvy. And ultimately, I think that's what they all wanted to begin with.
One of my favorite moments was when I think it was in the antiperspirant, when you asked them, like, how would you describe it? Which seems to me to be like one of the easiest questions
ever, right?
Yes. And the woman just says, that's a very good question. I mean, does she still have her job?
Amazingly enough, all those people are still there. All those people still have their jobs. They're all still working away. Amazing.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you're taking some of the credit for bin Laden.
I'm still waiting on that check from the government. I mean, I'm hoping some of it, like maybe like some sort of a fractional check shows up.
All right. Well,
maybe I'll take 10%. 10% of the reward.
So people can go to thegreatestmovieeversold.com, find out where it's screening locally. And people should understand that every time you go, you're actually increasing the chances that Palm Wonderful will be sending Morgan a check.
That they'll actually be a little more on the hook for making this movie. So, yeah. So I encourage everyone to go and take 1,000 of your closest friends.
There you go. All right. Well, Morgan Spurlock, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Really thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, folks. We got to take a break. We will be right back after this with what's that dude's name?
Chris Rosen. Other?
Chris Rosen will be joining us. And then, of course, later in the program, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter jam-packed today. We'll be right back after this. How did you get that job? Chris Rosen theme song. Chris, can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you.
I heard you had a big show today. You know, Morgan Spurlock. What a fun show.
Yeah. Well, it's been up to this point. Listen. And we have some controversy, I should say, about Jimmy Reefercake's song this week. We'll play it after you get off. I don't have the ability to play it for you this week. There's some controversy about the song. That's all I'm going to say.
Why?
Well, because it seems to be the same song from last week, as far as I can tell. Same bass line, again with the Osama, no drama. And the guy's releasing it before we debut it on the show.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah. Why is that a problem, Chris? You understand this dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want the exclusive first listen on Majority Report.
Thank you. That's self-evident. Now, speaking of self-evident things, Chris Rosen, I have not had a chance to catch up on the films that you've suggested because I have created a monster. My wife insists on watching.
You're still doing Battlestar.
Ugh, it's a long show.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
How long?
Well, I mean, it's like four seasons worth. And
Jesus.
We watch like one or two a night now.
We're doing, me and my girlfriend are doing The West Wing. We're marathoning through that.
God, unbelievable.
Why? You don't like The West Wing?
It's just mediocre at best. Ugh. There is the best thing I can say about The West Wing is that I found is somebody tweeted a words to the theme song. They sang
oh,
The West
really?
Wing. Yeah, it's pretty funny. You can find
funny story on Parks and Recreation. You could do that also. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
Oh yeah. Okay. So what do you got for us this week? Everybody knows the ground rules for this. Hold on. It is Chris Rosen comes on from MovieLine.com, where he is spending his time not reviewing my movie that came out on DVD now over a month ago. Then he comes on and he tells us, he gives me a suggestion as to what to listen, watch on Netflix or Amazon On Demand, as I'm not allowed to leave my house because of my child.
That's right. That's the segment. You nailed it. Last week, I think I suggested you The Tillman Story, which I think you should still watch.
Right.
And this week, you know, on another one you'd have to purchase, you know, on demand or whatever. There's not really a lot going on because this is we're
right.
in the time
there's
of the year.
Just, there's just the past 40 years, 50, 60, 70 years
well, listen,
of
let
movie
me,
history
let me
available
set this
here.
Up, jerk. Listen.
There's nothing going on.
Right now, the new releases are movies that
because you know why there's
winter.
Nothing going on oh. is because okay. of course Parks and Recreation is on sabbatical, right? Is that what it is?
No, well, it's the finale's next week. I haven't have seen it. It's very good, but you know, nothing's going on because the January movies are coming out on DVD, and you know they were bad. So we don't want to look at new releases. If you're into that, you could rent like No Strings Attached, but that was terrible.
Never even
but
heard.
I would suggest. You could on-demand Fair Game. I don't know if you saw that. It
no.
was it's not the Cindy Crawford Billy Baldwin movie from
that I wasn't aware of.
It's the Valerie Plame movie that Doug Liman did with Sean Penn and Naomi Watts.
Oh yeah, is it good?
It's very good. It's smart and it's out now on demand. And I think you would like it. I mean, you know, it's kind of Doug Liman's a very good director. You know,
I know the story. I've met Doug Liman actually a couple of months ago. I was at lunch with Sarah Silverman. That's a double name drop of Friday.
Charge.
And Doug Liman was a little bit sort of a dick.
He's kind of a little of a dick. I saw him and Alec Baldwin talk at the Tribeca Film Festival. I can name drop Friday also. A couple weeks ago. And
well,
about
you
the movie.
Saw them talk.
Yeah.
You can also see him talk on TV. My
well,
point
I was
is
in the
I
audience.
Was talking to him.
I was in the audience. I mean,
it's
I could
not name
I, you know.
Drop.
Oh, well.
That's not name drop. That's like saying.
I saw
hey,
him talk
oh,
in the audience.
That's like saying, like,
I was in the same room.
You know, who I saw was President Obama.
Oh, really? Where'd you see him?
On the TV.
Oh.
Although I have to admit, I did meet Obama as a candidate, but that's not relevant.
Not a big deal.
It's
charge.
So anyway, I saw him talk about it, and he was saying, you know, he doesn't like to do movies that have like a timely edge, but he was very interested in doing this movie, even though no one was really interested in hearing the story because it was a huge bomb at the box office. It didn't really get that much of a release either because, you know, people don't like to go see movies about like current events. But at the same time, I think you would like it, and I think it plays very well, especially in like the home theater. Home video format.
Right. I mean, I know the story quite well, and I've met, of course.
Doug Liman's father actually was the lawyer. He said for against the Iran-Contra. Funny story.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's a famous lawyer.
Okay, so Fair Game, and what's the other one?
And the other one, just for fun, because you know you had Morgan Spurlock on. You know, a lot of his movies are available on Netflix Instant Watch, and I think you know it's always good to revisit a classic like Super Size Me. Or his segment in Freakonomics, which itself is not a great movie. I didn't think it was very good at all. But his particular segment is very funny, and it's about, like, baby names.
You understand that Morsi or Norsi or the new Dorsey is laughing at you? You're coming on, and you're recommending a movie that you say you don't think is very good.
No, I didn't say that. You didn't listen to me. I said Freakonomics is not a very good movie. But Morgan Spurlock's segment of Freakonomics, which is the first segment, is.
Well, then somebody, you might as well just say, like, you should watch a trailer or YouTube of it.
No,
or
why? Because it's like 30 minutes. It's like 20 minutes, probably, his segment. And you can watch it for free. It's on Netflix. You don't have to watch a whole movie on Netflix.
You can't be bothered to give me a whole movie.
I said, supersize me.
Oh, God.
You know, one where he eats McDonald's.
When did you come up with that supersize me? Like 15 minutes before the show?
No,
when I said
I
it's crowded today,
said,
we got Morgan Spurlock on?
No, I saw you. I knew you were having Spurlock on. I saw you tweet about it earlier in the week, and I thought that would be nice.
You're like the Jimmy Reefer cake of movies.
I'm not like
reviews.
The Jimmy Reefer cakes. I'm like,
except, you know,
I'm producing your show.
Just rehashing his song from last
show
week.
Flow.
It's unbelievable.
I'm making your show flow.
What do you mean you're making my show flow?
Because now it all is connected. Oh, you had this guy on, and now we're going to recommend his movie at the end of the show. That's what you
dude, I said at the beginning of my introduction of him, supersize me. Where in the
well,
world is Osama bin Laden?
I know he directed them, but I'm saying you could watch them. Again,
oh, he needed somebody to explicitly say, you should watch this.
When was the last time you saw supersize me?
Forget about it, all right?
Come on.
Forget about it.
Come on.
All right.
Also, No Strings Attached. You can Netflix that. I mean,
what's that?
Watch that online. That's a stupid romantic comedy that came out earlier in the year with Natalie Portman and Ashton Kutcher.
Dude, you know what you should do? You should come on and suggest that I get like, Sam, you should get diarrhea. You should contract like E. coli
Sam,
or something.
Sam,
sickness.
I want you to eat undercooked pork.
Sam,
and
get
then
a flu.
Watch
get
No
the flu.
Strings Attached.
Get the flu. No, it's not a movie. It's just like a virus.
I want you to lick a subway.
Chris
home.
Rosen at 42-inch TV.
That's my Twitter handle. Feel free to tweet me, folks. I love comments.
That's what I... Jesus. Unbelievable.
And it's movieline.com. That's movieline.com.
Right. Go there to see the latest on Parks and Recreation, which you can also see on your TV. Good day, sir.
And Netflix.
All right, we come back. I'll be talking to Cliff Schecter. Jam-packed today, Casual Friday. Back on the Majority Report. It's Friday, Casual Friday. A little bit jam-packed today, but now, for your listening pleasure, Mr. Cliff Schecter.
Hello there, sir.
Hello, Cliff. Hold on for 1 second. Let me just raise my... Oops. I know, folks, I know, but you know, look, I don't know what to tell you. That's the sound that you're going to hear. Today we're... You there, Cliff?
I'm here, dude.
I hear a weird echo on your phone, but it's fine. So now, Cliff, let me start before we get into this. I'm going to play for you Jimmy Reefer Cake song. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear it because today we've got a funky situation because Evan is sick. But if you can't hear it, I'll try and can you hear this? There wasn't no drum. Can you hear that?
Nah, I can't hear it.
All right, well, I'm going to play some of it back for you so you'll be able to hear some of it. Okay.
Excellent.
Here we go.
When Obama got Osama, the goal is keeping terrorism calm. But when you celebrate, don't do it with hate. Do it because you think the USA is great. When Obama got Osama, there wasn't no drama. So you can party with some beer or marijuana. Right wing wants more gore. The left wants a trial. President Obama staying cool all the while. The goal is keeping terrorism calm. So when Obama got Osama, there wasn't no drama. I've been tweeting with you all. Tweet, Twitterly. News. Shout out to all my followers. Catch you. Look at you. Avant, Kyle, Shank, Alex, Longshoreman, I am. Gotta laugh, hi, Johnny. And of course, Majority.fm. Don't you all mind me smoking weed like a chimney? You don't got to smoke nothing to enjoy yourself, son, Jimmy. Hey.
All right, that's the song. Did you hear it?
Couldn't really hear it well, Sam, so describe to me some of the key components.
Did you hear the song last week?
I did.
Yeah, okay. That's all you need to know.
It's good stuff.
Plus the word twiddly do.
Well, no, the point is that Jimmy Reefer Cake is supposed to be doing a minute-long recap of the news this week, and it was all about no drama, Obama with Osama, and the same baseline as last week. And on top of that, he's releasing it a day early. And sending it out to everybody.
So what you're saying is you've been completely screwed.
I mean, it's, I got to say that last week the song was great. This week the song was the same. You know, he added Twitter in there and then he sends it out. The whole thing is it's supposed to be a feature that you hear on Majority Report first. I don't know.
Do you know where he lives?
Maine. In a poppy field, I think.
Any members of SEAL Team 6 up there?
There you go. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about there's because I know, you know, Listen, I know you, Cliff. I know what's on your mind today. And first, let's start with Newt. Newt Gingrich has announced that he's going to run. How excited are you about this?
I could not be more excited. It's going to be the first combination presidential run slash reality show looking for your fourth wife in the history of the country. So how can you not be excited about that, frankly? You know, it'll be fun watching Newt mouth lots of platitudes that don't make any sense and even didn't make any sense back in 1993 and explain why he was bonking the help while he was trying to impeach Bill Clinton for the same thing. I'd like to hear about that.
Well, you know, there's a great story by David Korn in Mother Jones this week. I don't know if you saw it. I think it was dropped yesterday. You know, tell people, just give them the background about Newt and his marriage. Like, look, I don't care, except for the fact that he has been moralizing. He's claimed that patriotism made him cheat on his wives. This is the guy who led the impeachment against Bill Clinton. And apparently it was not about the sex, but it was about the lying or some such. Just give us the quick encapsulation of Newt Gingrich, just in case people forgot.
Well, let me go just a little even longer term, and since the 90s, I think it's important for people to know that Newt Gingrich in the long term is no different than Mitt Romney over the last 10 years. When he first was elected to office, and I'm thinking it was the late 70s, he ran as a Rockefeller Republican. People remember what those were. Those were actually Republicans that you might have liked. You know, he ran as a liberal Republican. So he changed really most of his positions after that. He also has a PhD in history, so he actually has some understanding of history, which means it amazes me because I have not written a dissertation but took PhD courses in history. And for anybody to study everything that you really have to study to get that and to understand what this country, you know, what has been done to minorities and other people in the history of this country, and I'm not USA bashing, it's really more the history of the world, and to take the views he's taken, it makes it even that much more abhorrent. So I'll start with that, and then the quick roundup is, yeah, the 1990s, he became speaker. He became speaker largely by you know, exaggerating and going full force to try and destroy the career of the speaker, of the Democratic speaker, Jim Wright of Texas. And then, you know, for, I think at the time he had taken a book contract. And then, of course, Newt Gingrich, what did he do as soon as he became speaker? He got a book contract for big money. I mean, there's no principles there. He got busted on ethics charges for using GOPAC, a little GOP PAC, for using tax, you know, deductible, you know, for playing around with, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. But I mean, he busted all sorts of ethics laws. Let's just put it that way. I guess I'm not a lawyer, so I won't go into all the nitty gritty details. So he got busted on that. And then, of course, he went after Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton dared to commit an infidelity. And Newt Gingrich left his first wife while she was in the hospital with cancer. That's when he told her he was leaving her. And then at the time he was impeaching Bill Clinton was having a dalliance with the next wife, she was a staffer. I don't remember if she was his staffer on the Hill, but she was a staffer on the Hill. So that's Newt Gingrich in a nutshell.
Okay, so with that background, it was Calista Bissick at the time, and she was one of his congressional aides. So David Korn retells this email that he just received, and I'm going to read the email to David Korn. A long time ago in a far, far place, place far, far away, I was a military escort at NATO, Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers in Europe, assigned to meet, brief, escort, and coordinate the visit of then-Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich and a congressional leadership codel of six others and spouses in Europe. This is, you know, for Bosnia. And we were based out of Rome with day trips to various U.S. military headquarters in Europe and downrange trips to several of the bases in Bosnia. After a day trip and an audience with the Pope, the entire group returned to the hotel. I placed myself in the hospitality room to be available for questions about the rest of the trip. Around 11 p.m., Gingrich came in, started to shoot the bull. We talked mostly about military readiness, the lack of spare parts, the strain of Bosnia on the deployed forces, nothing compared to today, and general stuff. He called it a night at about 1 a.m., and I closed up shop along with some of the other military personnel. The next morning, the traveling Marine with the congressional delegation pulled me aside to rip me a new backside for keeping the speaker up until 4 a.m. I told him 4 a.m. was bunk, that he was in bed at 1 and it was his choice to stay up and talk, not mine. Turns out that Marianne Gingrich, this is wife number 2, had found the Marine escort and chewed him out for the speaker not coming to bed until 4 a.m. Seems there were 3 missing hours. And now for the rest of the story. Also on the trip and traveling as a staff was Gingrich's current wife, presidential spouse, aspirant, and then congressional staffer, Callista. I meant this.
Charge.
Seems that the then speaker scheduled himself a traveling, quote, storm in any port. He has sex with his mistress after visiting the Pope with his wife in the hotel room next door.
It's a shame the Pope was busy at that time, or I think he would have done it right in front of him. what's great about that story is that that is Newt Gingrich. That may sum up Newt Gingrich better than the long-winded attempt I took at it. I mean, he basically is a guy, he's one of the people most responsible for taking the Republican Party to the sort of right-wing, sex-obsessed cult that it's become today. This sort of fake family values obsessed corporate slave party that it's become, and he took it there on purpose. He's a guy that has literally no moral compass. Will do one thing one day and claim just the opposite the next day. He can't get his stories on whether we should have intervened in Libya correct. You know, he changes that from day to day. And then again, you know, whether it's his marriages, whether it's what, you know, I mean, I don't criticize people out there who choose to convert, but to me, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Newt chose to convert to Catholicism, which he did as part of a political plan.
He's a scam artist. I mean, more than anything else, he's a scam artist. He knows he's not going to win. This is just another way for him to juice his income.
That's exactly right. Look what happened with Mike Huckabee. Anybody heard of Mike Huckabee before a couple years ago? You know, now he's like making horrendous cartoons about the Reagan day. Did you see that, by the way, Sam?
I did. We played one of them yesterday, the one about World War II that ends with the kid saying, "You can't believe the things you see in books and in newspapers." The truth sometimes lies in a 3-minute cartoon that Huckabee put out.
Right. I mean, this is a guy that basically, before he ran 4 years ago, was his life pretty much consisted of throwing squirrels in the popcorn popper and taking all the furniture out of the mansion, the governor's mansion in Arkansas that wasn't nailed down.
Right.
And now he's got his show on Fox, and he writes best-selling books, and he's a speaking tour. Obviously, same thing with Sarah Palin, and now we're going to be subjected to her daughter being in a reality show. These become like family franchises on top of everything else. So it's a huge, big, free PR campaign. Because the press actually pays attention to you, whereas they've learned to ignore Newt Gingrich studiously for years now. So that's what he's doing.
So while we're talking about despicable, greedy men without any moral compass, Lanny Davis.
Hey, Lanny, yeah.
The
guy that served on George Bush's Privacy Commission.
Yeah, just give us a little bit of your take on Lanny Davis. I don't know if you saw this squawk he's having with Gary Trudeau, who did a cartoon about him, mentioned him in a cartoon. But give me your Lanny Davis brief.
Complete joker, you know, was a lawyer in the Clinton administration and used that to kind of go on and create, mini D.C. fame for himself. Complete Liebermanite, was an apologist for Lieberman from A to Z back in 2006. My favorite part about him, actually, is that he wrote a book about how attack politics was ruining America and then spent the entire 2008 campaign putting up posts at the Huffington Post and other places that were coming that basically bordered on birtherism, going after Obama because he was a Hillary sycophant.
You know,
not to say that it was her fault. It was his, you know, I'm not saying she wanted him to be.
Well, one never knows, but I'll tell you, I remember, and I cannot remember what it is. Mark Green came up to me one day and he's like, Sam, do you want to write about he was pitching me some story about Obama. Maybe it was like, I can't remember what it was. it wasn't something like cocaine use, but it was something sort of like down that road. And I just looked at him and I go, absolutely not. And I swear to you, within 16 hours, Lanny Davis had written that piece in the Huffington Post.
Well, that sounds about right.
They were just looking for one other person. So Lanny Davis, I don't know if you've heard this story, but last Friday, Gary Trudeau in his comic strip Doonesbury took a shot at Davis for representing the Ivory Coast strongman Laurent Gbagbo.
Of course. Why could we? I was letting him off on his sleazy lobbying career, so at least you're getting to that now.
A horrible, just brutal dictator.
Right.
And the piece basically said, where is it? I've got it. Hold on for one second.
Basically, this guy was voted out of office, but refused to decide that instead of leaving office, he would kill people and stay in.
Right.
And that's who Lanny Davis thought was you know, I think, what, $100,000 a month?
$300,000. So it's like, here's the story. So the cartoon has Duke and his son Earl talking about the effects of the Arab Spring on business because they're lobbyists.
Right.
Remember that big Ivory Coast account we lost to Lanny Davis Associates? Davis bailed. Dictators are just too toxic now. If this keeps up, we'll have the dirtbag space all to ourselves. And so Lanny Davis wanted a retraction because apparently what happened is Lanny Davis took $300,000 from Gbagbo. When Gbagbo refused to meet with Obama, he said, I'm quitting after 10, 12 days, kept $150,000 of it, and returned $150,000.
He was in a good mood. Wow, what a generous guy.
And Davis was pissed because he wrote to Trudeau like, I took that job to help get him out of office. And Trudeau said, your view of yourself as a peacemaker notwithstanding, I think it's fair to say that Gbagbo didn't send you $300,000 to arrange his own exit.
Where was all this stuff? Where was this back and forth?
Politico. They CC'd Politico on their email exchange.
So it's all but Politico. I got to go read the whole thing.
Oh, you're going to love it. All right, well, listen.
I take perverse pleasure in reading stuff about Lanny Davis because he's such a slimeball.
Such a slimeball. We're going
and you know the worst part is like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. What's the worst part?
Well, the worst part, what I can't stand the most are the guys, and, you know, I'm somebody that launches attacks on people, as are you, Sam.
Right.
When we don't like people, we do. So we don't whine and cry when people launch attacks on us. I fight back and I hit back, but I don't say stuff like, you can't say that about me, that's mean. I get so tired of people doing that. Whereas Lanny Davis is like basically like a Democratic, and I put that in quotes, Breitbart.
You
know what I mean? I mean, Breitbart is the first one to launch attacks on everybody else, but the minute anybody attacks him, he goes and he whines and cries in the corner about it. Well, that's what you've got with what I can't stand. I mean, that's why when you put up on Twitter, you know, Lanny Davis whines, I mean, that just was so perfect because that encapsulates who he is. He's just this whiny, cranky, just, oh, he's just such a sleazeball.
A sleazeball. I mean, just an amazing sleazeball. And, it'd be, you know, I want to mention this on the free podcast. We'll have more on this on Monday. But yesterday, May 12th, was a big day of protest. And yesterday, and you will appreciate this because this is pretty impressive. There were over 25,000 people marching on Wall Street yesterday. 25,000 to protest the budget cuts that Bloomberg's doing, the budget cuts in this state, the budget cuts that are coming down the pike in this country, and the fact that you've got Wall Street hedge fund guys and corporations not paying their fair share of taxes. It was incredibly impressive, and we'll have more information as that comes.
Who put it together? That is a very impressive amount.
Well, all I can tell you is you can go to onmay12th.org or you can find On May 12th on Facebook. Onmay12th.org or On May 12th on Facebook. Get more information. Get into the loop. I mean, it's been hard to a certain extent to get information of what's happening because they don't want to talk about exactly where they're doing direct action all the time.
Give them, I don't know, because I was asking you that because I don't know that it was them that were involved, but there also was a great march on the Koch Theater, right?
In, yes. Lincoln. Oh, exactly.
Oh, sorry,
that was the other thing. I'm sorry. Yes.
Coquette Theater in Lincoln Center. And,
right.
That looked pretty impressive, too.
Yeah, you can go to other98.com, David Koch Theater rebranding. We'll have that up on the site at Majority FM. A little slow today because we have no Evan, but they basically, they did a little situationist stuff. They put those sort of like voice bubbles over the sign David H. Koch Theater. I'm the Tea Party's wallet. And they had a bunch of people out there protesting, nearly, I think, 1,000 people. It's quite impressive.
I got to say, I mean, post, you know, maybe the what happened in Wisconsin was the beginning of something, because it seemed like a lot of that was purely sort of people being inspired and getting tired of it and, you know, a really organic uprising against what's going on out there. And then it happened here in Ohio, in addition, when John Kasich's bill went even further to strip firemen and police, in addition to all other public employees of the right to collectively bargain. And then, you know, this stuff seems like it's spreading like wildfire. And I remember a year ago people asking, where are all the protests? And, you know, sometimes I think people get past their demoralization at some things that happen. It takes a little while. It's almost like going through some of the stages of grief. But it seems like, you know, people, we've really gotten there.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this a little bit more in the post show, because we're well over time. So let's take a break, and if you can hang with me for about another 10 minutes, that would be great.
That will be awesome.
All right, we're gonna head to the post show, folks. I'll take your IMs at Majority FM. We're not gonna be able to take calls today. It's like I say, we're shorthanded, and we got plenty to talk about. We got some IMs. We will talk about that. Folks, remember, please, if you can become a member, we desperately need your support. We are now just about under projections, and so really need your support. If you can afford to, please, 50 cents a day, 50 cents a day, 10 bucks, you can maybe see a movie, maybe, for 10 bucks. But for 10 bucks, you get, what is it, 3, 6, 7.5, I don't know, 30, 40 hours a week of a month of programming? More? What is it? Yeah, it's almost 40 hours a month.
Just $10 a month?
Yes, that's it, just $10. Plus, you can support the show by getting a link on Amazon at Majority FM. Go to justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code Majority, get 10% off your coffee, tea, fair trade. It's a great company. And don't forget, donateyouraccount.com, where you can donate your tweet. We'll be right back with more Cliff Schechter. Who is at Cliff Schechter on Twitter? We'll be right back.